The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
Parashas Emor, Vayikra Chof Gimel, Posuk Chof Gimel, Vaidaber Hashem al Moshe Lemor. And Hashem said to Moshe Sein, Daber al Bnei Yisrael Lemor, Vachedish Hashvi Be'echad Lachedish. In the seventh month, on the first day of the month, Yelochem Shabosim, Zichrein Trua Mikro Kodesh. It shall be a day of rest for you, and a day of blowing the shofar. Kol Meleches Avedo Leisasu V'Krafnim Yishal Hashem. You shall not do any work, and you shall bring a sacrifice to Hashem. This refers to Rosh Hashanah. Then it states, "Vaydaber Hashem al Moshe lemor, Ach, be'osor lachidish hashvi azeh, on the tenth of the seventh month, Yom HaKippurim hu. It shall be a day of Kippurim, of atonement." Mikra Kodesh Yelochem, a sanctified day for yourselves. V'nisem es nafshei seichem, v'kraftim ishel Hashem. And you shall humble yourselves and bring a sacrifice. Ki yom kippurim hu lechaper aleichem lifnei Hashem elokeichem. Because this is a day for kapor, for atonement, before HaKodesh Baruch Hu. These are the psukim, the sources in the Torah for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Now it states in the seventh month, first day of the seventh month is Rosh Hashanah, and the tenth day of the seventh month is Yom Kippur. You can ask the question here, what does it mean, the seventh month? Now it is referring very clearly to the month of Tishrei. And Tishrei is the first month. So why is it called the seventh? So the answer to that is simply because Klal Yisrael was commanded in Parshas Boy, Achedish Hazer Lochem Rosh Chodesh Reish Chodoshim Rishon Hu Lochem Lochetsh Lochot Shashonam. That Nisan shall be your first month. Lochem, to you, not to the nations of the world, but you shall count from Nisan. That shall be the beginning of the year for you. That's when Pesach falls. So therefore, counting from Nisan, Tishrei is the seventh month. But still, we can ask a question. It is true. For us, it's the seventh month because we count from Nisan. But the significance of Rosh Hashanah is Hayom Haras Olam. It was the creation of the world. So therefore the Torah shouldn't emphasize here that this is the seventh month. The significance rather, and the emphasis, is that this is the first month. Because we're talking here of the first month of the creation of the world. And then, again the Torah repeats it. It says on the first day of the seventh month is Rosh Hashanah, and then on the tenth day of the seventh month, immediately after it says the tenth day of the seventh month. It would have been sufficient to say it's the tenth day, we're speaking in the seventh month. So again the Torah repeats it. It seems from here that there's a particular significance in the seventh month, which again is referring to Tishrei, and the tenth day. Now, if one would ask, why does Yom Kippur fall on the tenth day of the seventh month? We know Rosh Hashanah should fall on the first day of Tishrei, because as we said, that was the day of the creation of the world. But why does Yom Kippur fall on the tenth day? So that the Gemara tells us, because that was the day when HaKadosh Baruch Hu pardoned Klal Yisrael after the breaking of the tablets. They received the tablets on Shavuos, and 40 days later Moshe came down and broke the tablets because of the Egel Azov, the golden calf. Then he went back up to the mountain for a second 40 days, and then he went back up to the mountain for a third 40 days. And finally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgave Klal Yisrael and gave them the new Luchos, the second tablets, and it was the 10th of Tishrei. And therefore, that day was set aside as a day of atonement. The Gemara says at the end of Masechet Tainis, Yom Kippur is Yom Slichu Mechila Yom Shenitnu Bei Luchos Hashniyos, Luchos Achreinus. It was a day of Slicho, of atonement, a day when the second tablets were given. But then, even on that, we could ask, why did it happen to fall on the 10th of Tishrei? And therefore, it just happened that this day would be set aside for Slicho Mechila, for atonement all of the time. We, as a Jewish people, are always counting. We count Hayom Yom Rishon, Hayom Yom Sheni, Hayom Yom Shlishi. Today is the first day, second day, third day, till Shabbos. Seventh day is sanctified at Shabbos. Then we count 7 years. The seventh year is sanctified. That's Shemitah. And then we count seven Shemitahs. And the 50th year is sanctified. That's Yovel. And we count 49 days between the going out of Egypt and the receiving of the Torah. And the 50th day is when we receive the Torah. We Jews are always busy counting. And the reason for this is because the world's always moving. When we count time, we're calculating the movement of the world in relation to the solar system. The solar system would stop. There wouldn't be any calculation of time. And the world is always moving from the first instant it was created until the Ketz HaYomim, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu will call the world to an end. When people say life is very uneventful sometimes, that's subjective. It's very eventful. It never stops for a second, for a microsecond. The solar system doesn't stop. So that's very subjective. So it's important that we're always counting. And that's what life is. Man was allocated so much time in the world, and his life ticks away, his time ticks away, the world ticks away. So time is very, very important. And related to time is numbers. And we find also that the science of numbers, mathematics, is something which plays an enormous role in the world. First of all, mathematics is something which is universal in any language. You add things up or you calculate and you'll always come to the same conclusion. And it's a very, very definite science. One of the most definite sciences that we have states you can't, numbers do not lie. And we see consistently that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he created the world, just like he created part and parcel of the world, time was also numbers, as we are told consistently. Which number of the month this should fall in, which number of the day, and so forth. So in order to understand, perhaps to come to a little better understanding, what is the significance of the seventh month, and even further, what is the significance of the 10th day of the seventh month, let's try to understand the significance of the numbers which precede this level. And numbers also in the Torah are always identified also with the letters of the Hebrew alphabet. Like the sages say, Aleph represents one, Beis represents two. So let's try to probe a little into this evening, and then perhaps we can have a better understanding of what is the significance of the 10th day of the 7th month. The first letter of the Hebrew alphabet, which is Aleph, and that represents the number 1. This is very important, because the Medrash tells us that that is similar to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Ani Echad Ve'Ato Echad. I am one and you are one. And therefore he chose that letter to reveal himself to Klal Yisrael when he gave the Torah. The first of the Ten Commandments was, the first letter was an Aleph. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am the Lord your God. Lo yeh lecha Elohim acherim al ponai. You shall not have any other gods. So he used that letter to reveal and identify himself. Because you are one, he told the Aleph, and I am one. The significance of one is very, very important. Like we say, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. And this means that he is single, without any partner. He is the single source to all creation. He is the single source to everything. He has no partners, and he shares this position with no one, which tells us that he is the source of everything. Everything must come from him. Like the Rambam writes, all creation comes from that single source. If there is anything existing, it must come from him. Nothing can exist that does not come from him. And if everything would disappear, he would remain. Because everything is dependent on him, and he is dependent on nothing. And therefore, if everything would disappear, he would remain. If it's impossible for him to disappear, but if he would, then everything would disappear with him. So this is what is meant, that he is one. He is the single source of everything. Like if you find something, a tree, that has many, many roots, and you want to find its single source, where it came from, you're going to have to go down to the seed. You're going to have to find a single source. So therefore, when he wanted to teach Klal Yisrael Torah, he wanted to teach them what is the hidden source. Because the ultimate source is usually concealed. What is the hidden source for all of creation? And therefore he revealed himself with the Aleph. And this ultimately testifies to his majesty, to his Malchus. The king also is known as the Achara Am, single person of the nation. Because he alone rules. If he has a partner, then he's not a king. It's a council or a committee. He's not a king. The king is the single one that is over everyone else. So therefore, the Echo testifies to the Malchus Hashem that he is the absolute ruler. He's even better than an absolute ruler than in our minds, because in our minds, an absolute ruler is someone who governs a society. But it's not that he created the society. By the Malchus Hashem, the majesty of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not only does he govern the society, but he creates the society. And if he would disappear, there would be no society. So he is an absolute monarch in the most absolute terms. This is what is always meant when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, is Ani Echod. When we're Mekabel Ol Malchus Shemayim, when we declare the majesty of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and this absolute monarchy, we declare it by saying the Pasuk Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echod. The question is asked in that Pasuk, in that sentence, there is no referral to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Malchus, that he is the king. So the answer is as we said. This is how the Maral explains it. Because the fact that he is Echod, this is what we are declaring. So this declares his absolute monarchy. Therefore, one is a very, very important numero when it comes to our understanding. Now we come to two. Incidentally, the letter which correlates with one is Aleph. And two things we can learn from the Aleph. First of all, its name is Aleph. Aleph means a king. And secondly, it's a silent letter. If it's in the middle of a word, then it's silent. So this tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the king of the universe, and his source is Nelam, is concealed, is silent. Not only where we see it. It's, for example, if you see a river, but the source might be concealed. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to the world. And now we come to two. Two, the correlating letter for that is Beis. The Medrash tells us that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, he used the Beis. Why? Because he told the Beis, I want to use you because Brocha, the word Brocha starts with a Beis. And therefore, when creating the world, I want to use you. What is meant by this? The Maral explains. This was not the source, because the creation of the world was not the source. To the contrary, the creation of the world was a product of the source. The Almighty is the source. The creation of the world is one of his products. The creation of the world was the manifestation of his power in our world. It is where we saw the creation of matter, where we saw Yesh Me'ayin, a creation of matter coming from nothing in our world. Now this is what Brocha is, because Brocha is growth. Brocha means increase. So when the Almighty wanted to create the world, he wanted to use a letter that not testified to his source, but rather a letter which would bring forth an increase and a growth of something from nothing. Therefore he chose the Beis, because he told the Beis, you're Brocha, and this is what I need to create the world. Therefore, Breishis Bor Elokim, he started the creation of the world with a Beis. Now, it's interesting that this is the Beis, this was Breishis, and this correlates with the number two, because two is your first number that starts to increase. See, one is a single number. Two is your first number that starts with an increase. And that all represents brocha, and that represents bria. Bria is creation, growth. And the tchilas bria, the beginning of growth, is when something grew from nothing. This was the creation of the world. It's also interesting to note that everything he created in the world in twos. Everything he gave us a ben zug, everything in pairs. Even man and woman he created in twos. The fact is, this is his hallmark. This is the Almighty's identification mark on the entire creation. Scientists, as they delve into the mysteries of creation, they always find that everything is created in pairs, even down to the smallest cells. When he created man, also as a pair, so the Medrash says that one of the reasons is because people should not say that just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the king in the higher world, Shtei Reshuyos, there's another king of the world, and it's man. Now this has to do what we said with one. Because from the fact that man was created in a pair, this means he's not self-reliant. He's dependent on someone else. He cannot stand alone. All of creation complements each other, which means that alone they are not complete. Then they are not an absolute monarch. Because an absolute monarch is someone who's totally independent and rules alone. And therefore, in order to bring that out, that only HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the absolute monarch, he's the one. And already man falls one step, and he's two. So this brought out that She'en kan shtei reshuyos, there are no two monarchies. The Almighty is the only monarch. If man rules, man was made ruler because of the permission granted to him from a greater monarch. Now we go to three. What does three represent? The Gemara tells us three represents that what is perfect balance. Not to the right, not to the left, but perfect center. Something which is yosher, sholem. Because if you have one pillar, it can be to the right. If you have another pillar, it could be to the left. But the third one brings them together. It's also interesting to note that, to my knowledge, I have heard engineers and physicists say that probably the strongest structure is that of a triangle. And this is similar to what the Chazal tell us, what Shlomo HaMelech wrote, Achut HaMeshulash Leibi Mehera Yinotek. One cannot stand alone, and two cannot stand alone. But if you take a third one, and you put it in the center of the two, and you combine all of their forces, you harmonize all of their forces together, then Leibi Mehera Yinotek. And this is the principle of the triangle. But you take one, and you take another, and then you take a third, and you harmonize all of its forces together. This is what three represented. And this is why the Gemara tells us in Masechta Shabbos, on Peches Amar Aleph, Dorish Ahu Gliloi, Oleol Drav Chisto, Brich Rachmono, Diyoiv Urain Tilsoi, Blessed is the Almighty, who gave to Klal Yisrael a Torah which is threesome. Rashi explains it's threesome because it's made up of Torah, the Bimuksuvim. It's the Bible, it's the prophets, and it's the holy writings. Uraisi Tilsoi, Le'am Tilsoi, to a nation which is threesome. The nation which is threesome, Israel, this is Kohanim, Levim, and Yisraelim. Al Yedei Tilsoi. And in the giving over of the Torah, three were involved. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yisrael, and Moshe. B'yom Tilsoi. After 3 days, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told the people, sanctify yourself for 3 days. This was 3 days before the giving of the Torah. B'yarchai Tilsoi. And in the third month, as it states, B'chedesh HaShlishi, the third month of the going out of Egypt. So the Maral asks him, what is the beer? What is he talking about? He says, blessed HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who gave a Torah which is threesome, Torah Nevim Uksuvim, to a nation which is threesome, Kahanim Levim and Kahanim Levim and Yisraelim, to Al Yedei Tilsoi. Three people were involved, three forces were involved in giving it. After 3 days of pre-show of sanctification and the third month. So this is the explanation. Because on Torah it states, Kudi Hashem Yishorim. The mitzvahs of Torah are perfectly straight, which means they are not to the right, nor they are to the left. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it states, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Tev Yoshor. He's absolutely straight, not to the right and not to the left. Therefore, this is an identification of the character of Torah, of the character of the Almighty, and also of the character of Israel. Because we find that Klal Yisrael also has a foundation of a tripod. Gimel Ovis, three Ovis, Avraham, Yitzchok, and Yaakov. And it states Avraham was the first pillar, and he was to the first pillar to the right, and Yitzchok was the second pillar to the left, and Yaakov was the Chut HaMeshulash, Yaakov was the third pillar that harmonized the first two. And all three, the third, and all brought all three together. And because of that, it states that Yaakov was able to achieve what the other two were not. Not necessarily because he was greater in his own right, but because he was using and employing their forces. Because it states that Avraham, how great he was, and he gave birth to a Yitzchok, but he also gave birth to Yishmael. And Yitzchok, how great he was, he gave birth to a Yaakov, but also gave birth to an Esav. But it says, Yaakov was mitose shlema. The perfection only came after three generations with Yaakov. He was the Chut HaMeshulash. And Yaakov's name was called Yeshurun. And Yeshurun is from the word Yoshur. He was perfect in the middle, not to the right and not to the left. So therefore, Torah was given from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Israel. This is what three represents. What do we learn from here?
See,
from everything that we are saying, there's much to be learned. We learn from here, and we gave the shiur on this for Rosh Hashanah, that the perfection of man is to be yoshur. That's what tzaddik is. See? Tzaddik be yoshurhu. Not to the right and not to the left. Any leaning is dangerous. But yoshur. And that's the way up. That's the derech haTorah. That's what Torah is. That's why it states, Pekudei Hashem yeshorim misamchelei. The mitzvahs of Hashem are yoshur. They don't go to the right, or they don't go to the left. I just saw yesterday, someone showed me a shir from the late Mir Rosh Hashiva Reb Chaim Shmulevitz Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And it was a shir for Shabbos Shuvah. So when it states, he says, Yom Kippur, a person has to do tshuva. He says there's two things though. Nachkero drocheho v'no tshuva. We have to think and do tshuva. There's two things we must think about. Firstly, we must think about what deeds we did, which were not good deeds, what averus, specific averus, and do tshuva for that. That's one type of tshuva. But he says that basically, comparatively, is an easier avoda. That's easy, comparatively speaking. There's something more difficult. What is that? States, nachkro drocheho b'no tshuva. We have to think, not for specific acts, but perhaps our whole derech, our whole approach is the wrong approach. And on that, he says, it's very, very difficult to do tshuva. Maybe we're in the wrong direction. Person's traveling a longer way, so he can calculate a few mistakes he made along the way. But sometimes he's traveling along the way and he's in ganzen verfiert. He's going in the wrong direction. He's supposed to be going north, he's going south. Supposed to be taking a plane to America, and meanwhile it's going to Singapore. And every mile, he goes a mile more out of his way. And he brings many, many cases. Many cases. Where people, in all earnest, and as with all good intentions, went, they served HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're talking about drochim, ways in serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They served HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it was the wrong way, and they even gave their lives for such ways. And in the end, they ended up in Gehenna. It's like the world says that the road to Gehenna is paved with good intentions. So, therefore he says that a person must always be mispalel. This was related to what we spoke about yesterday on Shabbos Shuvah. A person must always be mispalel. And he brings consistency from David HaMelech, was always mispalel to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hadricheinu b'derech emes. Lead me in the right way. Lead me in the right path. You must always be mispalel. But then he says, also, you have to use your seichel also. So he says, the Torah has given us various simonim, various roadsides on which we can test if we're on the right path or the wrong path. Now he's speaking here of paths in Torah. See, I mean, if a person is going against the Shulchan Aruch, then he knows he's on the wrong path. He's speaking about people who are going in accordance to what they think the Shulchan Aruch is. For example, he brings by the Tzedekim or the Prushim. There were times when there were great machlekes and great disputes in Klal Yisrael over the interpretation of laws. See? So one sign he brings is because it states on Torah, mitzvahs Hashem, pkudei Hashem yishorim. The mitzvahs of Hashem are yoshor, are upright. Kodesh Baruch Hu, Tzadik V'Yoshur, upright, straight. So that's a test. If what you're doing is upright and just in your eyes and the eyes of the people, then it's got a good chance of being the right path. If what you're doing is not just and is not straight, not upright, doesn't make sense, then be careful. The Torah gave us that as a road sign. Be careful, you might be on the wrong road. This is very, very important. This is after, we're talking after, you might bring many, many proofs to what you're doing is right. But if it doesn't make sense, doesn't sound right, it's not something which is upright, it's not something which is just, then be very, very careful. This is one of the signs that he brings. He brings many, we don't have time to go into it now. But he brings, but this is one that he brings. And I was always very, 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 very overwhelmed and impressed by my rabbeim, how they could eliminate so much with the mere the mere argument is das kann nicht sein, das ist krumm, this can't be, it's crooked. After you bring all the riyas, all the proofs. In my last visit a year ago to Cleveland with my Rebbe, Reb Mordechai Gifter, again I was overwhelmed. After we were looking at something and someone wanted to ask her something and he was bringing 3-4 riyas, and the Gifter wasn't interested in refuting the proofs. Wasn't even interested. Wie kann das sein? He says, how can there be such a thing? Wie kann das sein? To quote his exact statement. Wie kann das sein? Wie kann das sein? Be'ilam. In the Welt. How can there be such a thing in the world? And that was it. And this was always like that. Whether it was a halacha, or whether it was a Sforah, the Gemara, or a Pshat in Tosfos. How can you say that Tosfos means something like this when it doesn't mean a word of sense, doesn't make a word of sense? With all the rayas. It means either rayas, means you got to go back and do your homework again. This was with their whole approach. Torah has to be yosher. It has to be straight. If it's straight and you have proof on it, then you're on the right path. If it's crooked, you can have 1,000 proofs. See? You didn't do your homework. This was the whole momentum, the approach. So this is what we're speaking here. This was an intrinsic part of Torah, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Klal Yisrael. Now we get to Revi 4. For refers to the directions in our world. In our world, the physical world, we say the source is a singular source. Very singular. It comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. By the creation of the world in Bereshis Beis, Pasuk Yud, V'nor Yetze Me'eden, La'ashkeses Agon. Kodesh Baruch Hu created Gan Eden, then he created a river that came out of the garden. Gan Eden was a level which was not our world, it was above our world. U'mishom Yiporein V'hoye La'ba Roshim. And there it divided into four directions, four tributaries. So this is telling us that he created the world from a singular source, and in Gan Eden it was still what was known as the Olam Achtus, singular source. But when it came into our world, it divided into four directions. And that's why our world is not known as the Olam Achtus. Our world, unfortunately, is known as the Olam HaPirud, the Olam HaHispashtus, a world of division. Incidentally, that's why there is so much machlekes all the time in this world, because it states this is the nature of the world. We see it's the nature of the world. Where do we see it? Because right from the creation, from the very creation, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Adam and Chava and then Cain veHevel, there was machlekes. That's the nature of the world. And the reason for that is because there's Sholem and machlekes. Sholem is Achtus. Sholem is one. And that's why it's the level of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shem shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But this world was the Olam HaPirut. His influence came to this world and ispastus, divided. That's the intrinsic nature of this world. And it divided into four directions. That's why we find in this world four directions: north, west, south, and east. See, the Arba Ruchais. This is also why the Hebrew letter, which correlates with the word four, is a horizontal line and a vertical line, a dalet. And the dalet is a horizontal line and a vertical line, denoting the directions of this world. Now we come to five. Five is the hay. The hay, the sages tell us, is one of the letters of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. And it states that with that letter he used that letter in the creation of Olam Hazeh in this world. As it states in the Pasuk, Bitku b'Hashem ad-ead, believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu all of the time, endlessly, because everything is within his power. He can do anything, he can change anything. Ki b'kor Hashem tzur elomim, because with the Yud and the Hey, he created both worlds. The Yud, he created Olam Haba, the next world, and the Hey, he created Olam Hazeh, this world. Why did he create this world with a Hey and the next world with a Yud? The Yud represents something which is Kodesh, totally sanctified, and that we'll speak on a little later. The Hey is made up of two letters. For Sefer, you ask a Sefer, how are you supposed to write a hey? He'll tell you. You write a hey, you write a dalet, and you write a yud. A hey is made up of two letters, a dalet and a yud. So he created this world with the hey, because this world, as we said, is like dalet. It goes in four directions, and the dalet represents a vertical and a horizontal, four directions. But he did not want that this world should be merely something of physical matter. See, all we should add here, why is this a world of directions and dimensions? Because all physical matter has to have dimensions. It has to have dimensions. There's no such thing as physical matter that does not have a dimension. But he didn't want that this world should only be a world of physical matter. He wanted that it should also have an attachment to something higher. So therefore he created it with a hay, because the hay is a combination of a dalet and a yud, which represents something which is dimensions, physical matter, and at the same time has a yud in it, which will elevate the world. So this is the hay. Now we come to, that was five, now we come to six. Where do we find the significance in six? That's in the creation of the world. The Sheshish Mayim Locho states that Sheshish Yomim Tase Melachte. 6 days you shall do your work, because for 6 days HaKadosh Baruch Hu did all of his work. So this represents the Sheish Yishimei Malocha. Six represents the sum total of the Olam HaTeva, the world of nature. The world of physical nature went up to the level of six. And after that, HaKadosh Baruch said, die off, enough. One day he worked. A second day he added to the creation. A third day he added to the creation. A fourth day. And every day he was adding new dimensions. A fifth day. And then 6 days. And after 6 days, HaKadosh Baruch said, enough. No more creation. No more working in the creation. So six represents the totality of the physical nature. That's why the Maral says something interesting. He says that you'll never find anything in the physical world that has more than a total of six dimensions. For example, six dimensions we find. That's in a cube. You take a cube, it has a top and a bottom, it has a right side and a left side. It has a front and a back. But you'll never find anything that'll have more than six dimensions. Unless you merely subdivide them, but then you're just a subdivision. But more than six total dimensions. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu put six dimensions into the physical world. And this was the Sheish Yishimei HaMelacha. Seven, in the Torah we see, has a very special meaning. Seven is Shabbos. 6 days he worked, and on the seventh day he rested, and he sanctified it. He rested, and it states, Zohar Hashem HaShabbos Lekatshoi, Kishesh Yishomi Mosa Hashem. Remember the seventh day to sanctify it, and it states, he blessed it and he sanctified it. So we see seven is very special. Seven, the Midrash tells us, the Hebrew word for seven is Sheva, is from the word Sova. The word Sova and Shava are the same letters. And Sova, the word Sphia, means satisfaction. Satisfaction means satisfaction. That means you are lacking nothing. When is a person satisfied? When no longer is he lacking. So the seventh day represented a complete totality that lacks nothing. Now, was that from this world or another world? Is that part of the creation or not part of the creation? The Midrash tells us, from one aspect, it's not part of the creation, because it states that HaKadosh Baruch Hu worked for 6 days, and then on the seventh day he rested. So it's not part of the Yemei HaMelacha. So therefore it must be from above the creation. But from the other aspect it states, Vayechal Elokim Bayom HaShvi, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu only finished creating the world on the seventh day, which means it was part of the Maaseh Bereishis of the creation. If he only finished on the seventh day, and as part of the creation, what was created on Shabbos? So the Midrash says, you know what was created on Shabbos? Menucha. What was the world lacking after the 6 days of work? Menucha. Rest. Bo Shabbos, bo Menucha. The world was lacking Menucha, so the creation on Shabbos was Menucha. Now really, this is a self-contradiction. Because creation and work means not resting. While resting means not creation and not work. See? Menucha is from the word noch, you stop. When something stops, that means nothing is created and nothing is happening. And to the contrary, when you're working, you're not resting. So therefore, the sages explain that Shabbos has a dual personality. It is part of this world and it's part of another world. Part of this world, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu incorporated it in the 7 days of creation. That also played a role in creation. But at the same time, it's not part of this world, because this world was the world of Asiya, of creation, of Malocha. And on Shabbos there was no Malocha. So therefore it has a dual personality. And that's why it can bring a Menucha into this world. Because the Gemara tells us that really in this world there is no Menucha. A person should not try to seek total rest in this world. He won't find it. Because this is the world of Malocha. This is the world to do. And when you're doing, you're not resting. When you're resting, you're not doing. A person can find a temporary rest in this world, but that's only to create and recharge his energies to do more. But a total peace of mind and a total rest, that the Gemara says will come after this world, in the kever. Whenever someone died, the Gemara calls it Neach Nafshe. He is now resting, but not in this world. Because this world is the Yemei Malocha. This is the world for work. The next world is the Olam HaMenucha, a world of rest. So that's why Shabbos is known as a Me'ein Olam Haba. That on Shabbos, then a person has a taste of a Menucha Shleima, of a total rest. Because Shabbos brought to this world something from the next world. And therefore Shabbos has this dual personality. It's part of this world and it's part of the next world. And that's why it states HaKadosh Baruch Hu blessed it, Vayivorech Yisrael and Vayikadosh Yisrael. He sanctified it. Now blessing means physical increase, like we said. Vayikadosh, sanctification, means it's separated from us. It's something which is not in our domain. And the Gemara brings, he was Vayivorech Yisrael. He blessed it. How did he bless it? Because we see a double portion of mon came down for Shabbos. Vayikadosh Yisrael, how did he sanctify it? No mon fell on Shabbos. Any mon that fell was Erev Shabbos. A double portion came, but not on Shabbos. It fell on Erev Shabbos. So this is both dimensions that Shabbos has. And that's why Shabbos is from the word Yemashvi Sova. Sova means totality, encompasses everything. It encompasses part of both worlds. Not long ago I gave a shiur, it was on Shabbos, on this. And I brought a medrash. Medrash says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world after the 6 days of work, something was still lacking. What was lacking? So it says, it's like a king who built a palace for his bride, but it was lacking the bride. Beautiful palace, but the bride was lacking. HaKadosh Baruch Hu built a beautiful palace, a beautiful world, but was lacking the bride. Shabbos became the bride, the Shabbos color. Now that dimension is where it draws the Almighty into the world. Just like if you have an empty palace, the king is not going to come home. But if there's a bride, he'll come home. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to identify himself with this world. So he gave the world Shabbos, and that brings HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world. That's the Baruch. Then the Midrash says another example. It says like a king who made a most beautiful ring. And it was of unparalleled value. What was it lacking? It was lacking the royal seal, the royal signet. Because a ring, no matter of what value, it's not the royal ring, it can be anybody's ring. It only becomes the royal ring with his signet, with his seal. So was it with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He created the world, but it was lacking the royal seal. And therefore he gave it Shabbos. Now there the explanation is that when he gave it Shabbos, it elevated the world to himself, where the world becomes royal. So what all of this means is Shabbos brought a new dimension to the world. It brought a dimension where it brought HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world, and it elevated the world to him and gave it a new level. Now, it's for this reason that we find that this is not only a level in Shabbos. The Medrash tells us in Parshas Emor, Choftes, Ostes. We find that not only Shabbos is special, but all sevens are special. In the heavens, you have an expression in English which says seventh heaven. That has a source in the Torah. Kodesh Baruch Hu created seven heavens, and it states that the seventh is the most special one. In the lands, he brings the seventh, was Eretz Yisrael. In the generations, so he brings the seventh generation, was special. Moshe was a seventh. Avram, Yitzchok, Yaakov, Levi, Kos, Amram, Mesha. The seventh son was David. States David was the Shvi, the seventh son. The seventh day is Shabbos, the seventh year is Shemitah, the seventh Shemitah is Yovel. Then it comes to Ar Posuk here that states, "Bachedesh Hashvi be'echad lechodesh." In the seventh month, on the first day of the seventh month, you shall make a Zichren Trua, a day of the Trua. Also, now we see why the Torah is emphasizing here the seventh month. That even though Tishrei was the first month, but it also has a significance and identification as the seventh month, because it's the seventh month of Nisan. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose that month to create the world, because Tishrei is the seventh month. There's a discussion in the Gemara exactly when did he create the world. Tishrei or Nisan. But even according to the one that he created the world in Tishrei, the reason why he chose this month, the Medrash says, because it's the Chodesh HaShvi. It's the seventh month from Nisan. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to create the world in the seventh month. Why? Because seven is always special. What does seven represent? Seven represents the force that will attach our world, the world of physical nature, the 6 days of Malacha, to a higher world. Just as Shabbos. Without a Shabbos, then it states HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't come to this world. And this world wouldn't be called his world. It would be like a ring without the royal seal. That's a nice ring, but it's not the royal ring. It would be like a palace without the king's color. It would be an empty palace. So therefore he created Shabbos, which will attach this world to a higher world, because that was the power of seven that is soveya, can encompass everything. So did he create the world in the seventh month, because he didn't want this world to merely be a physical world. He wanted this world to be his world, his kingly world. And he was very determined that the creation should be in the seventh month, because on Rosh Hashanah we declare his Malchus, his majesty. Why on Rosh Hashanah? Because that was the Tchilas Or Malchusa, that the first light of his majesty that came to the world. When did his monarchy come to the world? It says Ein Melech Ein Am, Ein Am Ein Am Ein Melech, Ein Melech Velei Am, that a king can't be a king without people. So his majesty, his monarchy, first came to the world when he created man. And therefore he wanted to create man in the seventh month. And the world would have an attachment to him. So now we've answered why does the Torah emphasize Machedesh HaShvi in the seventh month. Now let's go a step further. 8. What does 8 represent? Sages tell us that 8 represents Torah. Where do we see this? First of all, when we went out of Egypt, we counted for 7 weeks. And then on the first day of the 8th week, Torah was given on the 50th day. Another place we see it, when David HaMelech praised, he wrote praises on the Torah, and he praised the Torah with the entire Aleph Beis in Kapitel Kuf Yutes of Tehillim. He praised Torah with 8 times with each letter, 8 times with the Aleph, 8 times with the Beis, 8 times with the Gimel. And we find this in mitzvahs. Bris Milah is on the 8th day. Beis HaMikdosh, the Kohen Gadol, had 8 garments. Why is this? Because this represents now a higher level. Torah is higher than Shabbos, because Shabbos, we said, is part of this world and part of another world, and it brings the worlds together. Torah is only from another world. There is what is known as the wisdom of this world, and then there's the wisdom of Torah, which is a wisdom of another world. It's Chochma Elyena. So therefore Torah is entirely from another world, and therefore it's always denoted at the level of Shmeina, of 8. This is also why we find that many times miracles also were denoted with an 8, because big miracles had to do with something not from this world but contrary to this world. For example, it states by Oz Yoshir Meisha, by the splitting of the sea, that was contrary to this world. Oz was Aleph Zayin, 8. It's numerical value of 8. And it states that Bishchus of Shmini, the sea was split. What does it mean, Shmini? So the Medrash says Mitzvah Mila, or other such mitzvahs that are given with an 8. Now, so this is Torah. Therefore, we find Torah is very difficult to acquire. Says Eina Torah Nikne Elam Yesuri. Torah comes only through great, great difficulties. What can we learn from here? That when a person studies Torah, he shouldn't despair if it's so difficult, because he's learning the Chochma Elyona, he's learning a wisdom that's coming from another world. And if he forgets Torah, he shouldn't despair, because the Gemara says it's natural to always forgive. That's why we are constantly commanded to chazor, to go over and over. And that's why we have to learn every day Yom V'Laylo, because we are learning a wisdom that's coming from another world. And therefore, in our Torah, Niknele B'Yisurin, it says, Misha Memis Atzma, someone who is only prepared to give his life for Torah, will acquire it. It is so difficult to acquire, because it is the Chochma Alyena, it is a wisdom which is coming from another world. Not only that, but it preceded the creation of this world by over 900 generations, the Gemara says. So we're not dealing with something simple, and that's why also that you can't learn Torah superficially. You can't learn Torah like you learn something from this world. That's something also I could tell you about my Rabbi, and in particular Rav Gifter. The labor that he would put into understanding a piece of Gemara or a Tosfos, hundreds of times he'd go over a Sfora, hundreds of times, over and over and over, and attacking it from every possible angle and whatnot. And then he would say the Sfora in the Shir, and a week later he would come and he would tell me, he says, was ich gesagt ist nicht richtig. What I said is not right. Because he went over it another 100 times. And he had a deeper insight into it. And it was endless by him. And that's because you're learning something that comes from another world. That's the level of Shmona, that's something that's beyond the 6 days of Melacha. And it's beyond the level of Shabbos. From a different world. And from here also we can learn something else. Many people, when they want Torah, they just jump for it. Can't you see how long did it take man to go to the moon? And the moon is part of our system. You can't just jump for it. It's a life's pursuit. And it's a slow pursuit, and step by step. And that's why the Gemara tells us, is der heretz kodma l'teira, that a person cannot come to Torah if he doesn't have der heretz. The Maral says, what is der heretz? Der heretz is the chokhmah hatachtona. Der heretz is the wisdom on how one, a person, can dwell in this world. Person has to know how to live with people, how to get along with people, how to take care of himself. That's what their heritage is. How can a person come to a Chochma Elyona, to the wisdom of another world, if he doesn't have the wisdom of this world? So therefore, someone who doesn't have their heritage, Mishain by their heritage, then he has no Torah. That Torah is not a Torah, because the Torah of the other world is built on the foundation from this world. And it's interesting that on this set we're just speaking, it just happened to be, I saw this also yesterday. This is something that was said over in Tells very often. But I saw this also yesterday, Rabbi Cheskel Sana, the Hebron Rosh Yeshiva, he brings it. Yesterday I gave a shir from a few prokin in Mesidah Shishori, and he brings this in his agot. It's not relevant to the prokin we brought, but I saw it then. And this was something that was said over often in Tells. In Parshas Vayikra, it states in the beginning of Vayikra, after the going out of Egypt, after receiving the Torah and camping by the mountain for the year, and all of the Melechus and Mishkan, building the whole sanctuary, and the sanctuary was now finally completed, because that was the last Seder. The last Seder before that was Parshas Ketubot. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu now has brought his Shechina to dwell on the sanctuary. And the purpose of the sanctuary was, V'no'adeti shom, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, there I will meet you in the sanctuary, by the Orem, by the Kruvim, where the Torah is, and there I will teach you the Torah. And the whole rest of the Sefer Torah, basically, is what who would teach Moshe from the Ohel Moed, from the sanctuary. So, Kudel Moshe Vayidaber Hashem Elov Me'el Me'el Lemon. Hashem called to Moshe, and he spoke to him from the Ohel Moed. So the Chazal asked, why does it say Vayikra? He called to Moshe. That's why the Sefer is called Vayikra. Why? All the time it says Vayidaber. He spoke to Moshe. Here it says he called to Moshe. He called to Moshe, and then he spoke to him. What did he call? So the Medrash tells us, because when it was all, everything was all ready, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was waiting for Moshe to come into the sanctuary so he could speak to him and teach him Torah, Moshe didn't come. Wouldn't come. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to call him. Vayikra el Moshe. He called him. Moshe. Then Moshe came. Then Vayidaber. Then he spoke to him. Why didn't Moshe come? So the Medrash says, because you don't go into a king's palace without being summoned. It's not derech eretz. Don't walk in. This was the king's palace, the Chatzar HaMelech. You don't just walk in to see the king. You wait until you're summoned. You wait in the outer chamber, and his secretary will come out and tell you that the king will see you now. He'll call you. So therefore Moshe waited, and Vayikra, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu called him. So the Medrash says on this something which is very, very strong. This is in Vayikra Rabbah at the end of Perek Aleph, Os Tesvov. Medrash says, Mikan Omru. From here they said, Kol Talmud Chochem Shein Beidas. Any Talmud Chochem that doesn't act with Das, that acts without Derech Eretz, the Vela Teve Imenu. A carcass of a dead animal is better than him. Teidaloch. The proof is, Shekein Hu Tseil Amar V'Meshe. Go and learn from Meshe. Meshe was Avi HaChochma. Avi HaNevim. Meshe was the wisest Talmud Chochem that ever lived. He was the father of wisdom and the father of the prophets. And he took Klal Yisrael out of Egypt. And he executed all types of miracles in Egypt and on the sea. And he went up to the heavens and he brought down Torah. And he is the one who built the Mishkan. Now, everything was complete. Go and learn by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What are you waiting for? Go learn. If there was a great Gaon here, a great Rebbe here, no, go. Everybody would run. So what are you waiting for? And Moshe said, no. I will not go into the Olam Ha'ed. It's not their heritage to go into the king until I am summoned. Ache korale, until he was called. Shneemar vayikra el Moshe vayidab. Baruch Hu called, and then Moshe went in. So the Becheskel Sana says, this was always said over in Telzins. It comes from Becheskel Sana, was one of the great Talmidim from Rav Lezer Gordon. He says, are you going to let a little protocol stand in the way, which was the culmination of the whole taking Klal Yisrael out of Egypt and splitting the sea and giving Torah, bringing Torah down from heaven, and you're going to let a protocol stand in that way? a derech eretz cow that you won't go in until you're summoned? Where's the zrizus magdimin lemitzvah? You should run. Where is the kanos? Have you asked nomer? It says when you come learning by, when you come to learn Torah, it says you have to be as brazen as a leopard, as strong as a lion and brazen as a leopard. And now you're going to stand on protocol. What's going on? So he says, that's what the Medrash says. Meisha knew that kol Talmud Chochem shein b'derech eretz nevela teve imena. Meisha knew that if a Talmud Chochem lacks a derech eretz, then a nevela, a carcass of a dead animal, is better than him. How could he go to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to bring Torah to Klal Yisrael if he's going to be compared to a carcass of a dead animal? That's why Meisha could not go. He had to fulfill the Derech Eretz, because he understood that Torah is built on Derech Eretz. Derech Eretz kod melateirim, then Derech Eretz ain't Torah. If there's no Derech Eretz, there's no Torah. Because Torah comes from the higher worlds, and the Derech Eretz is the wisdom of this world. And how can we, Krichen Himmel, how can we go to the higher worlds if we're not a man of this world? That's what the Medrash says, Mikan. From here we see that a Talmud Chochem that doesn't have Derech Eretz is Nevela Teva Himena. What is it? Why does it compare it to a Nevela? This he doesn't say, but the explanation is because what's so bad about a Nevela? Nevela is a carcass of a dead animal. What's so bad about it? Once life leaves an animal, then the carcass rots and decays. But when it has life, then it's a fine animal. The same thing by a person. A person doesn't only have a physical life, he has a spiritual life also. And a Talmud Chochem. And if a Talmud Chochem acts without Derech Eretz, that's as if the life has been removed from him. It's the life that elevates the physical body. So the Torah and the life has been removed from it. So therefore, this is what we learn from the level of Torah, that it's not so easy to progress to Torah. That's why the Chazal tell us, Mem Ches Dvorim, a person has to work on 48 attributes if he wants to acquire Torah. Now, then we have 9. About 9. One thing is, we know it's Teishi Yacheledo. In our God, we say Tisha Mi Yodea. It's Teishi Yacheledo. It's the 9 months of pregnancy. But one thing is 9. People, most people won't realize this. 9 is the last number. 9 is the final number. We can only count up to 9. In mathematics, that's all that exists. 9 numbers, 1 to 9. Why do we say this? Because 10 is not a new number. 10 is 1. 10, we're going back to 1. 10 means a 1 knot. 20 means 2 knots. 30 means 3 knots. The difference between 1 and 10 is that 1 is counting single numbers, one single number, and 10 is counting units, one unit. If you have 20, that's two units. You have 100, that's 10 units. So 9 is the final number. That's all we have, is up to 9 numbers. And after that, it's just a repetition. And now we come to 10. The Gemara tells us, which is the Yud, is another letter of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. And with that Yud, he created the world to come. Now we said that he created this world with a Dalet and a Yud, and the world to come he created with a Yud alone. Now there's a big difference between a Yud and a Dalet. What's the big difference? The Dalet represents dimensions. It has a vertical line and a horizontal line. That represents matter, physical world. The Yud has no dimension, because a Nakuda, a dot alone, can be a Yud. And a dot is constantly divisible, because you can keep dividing it and dividing it, and it's still a dot. So therefore the Yud is the letter of the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which represents the next world. The next world is something which is totally non-physical and totally separated from this world. It's even higher than the world, than the level of Torah, because Torah and mitzvahs at least came down into this world. We fulfill Torah and mitzvahs, but the world to come is something that is not in this world. And this is why it states that no prophet or no eye has ever seen or prophesied the next world. This is what the Yud represents. So therefore, Yud represents a world which is totally detached from our world, that is totally non-physical, and Gemara always tells us that 10 always represents something which is Kodesh, something which is sanctified. Now we said that 1 and 10 are actually the same number. 1 represents 1 and 10 represents 1. Except 1 represents 1 in the single numbers and 10 represents 1 in the units. And we said 1 represents the source and the king. And both 1 and 10 represents the king. One represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who was the king of this creation. And 10 represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who was a king, not only of this creation, but a king all-encompassing. One represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who revealed himself to this world. That's the Mispar HaProti, the single numbers. 10 represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is an all-encompassing king, not limited at all. And this is what Ted is. And this represents another world. Now we can understand what our Pasuk is telling us. On the seventh month and the first day, this was a month which has a sanctity, because this month gives an elevation to our physical world. Being 7, it attaches the physical world to higher worlds. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he revealed his kingship, it gave a Melech HaKadosh, a sanctification to his kingship. You should celebrate Yom Teruah, a day of the shofar. That's Rosh Hashanah. That was one level of kingship. Then he said, "Ah, but on the 10th day of the 7th month, that will represent a further malchus, a further kingship, a kingship which is even beyond that, which is at the highest possible levels the world reaches. There will be Yom Kippurim, a day which I will come lechaper eskem, to sanctify, to forgive you, to atone you." And it takes place on the 10th day of the 7th month, because there is a further elevation. The Maral gives an explanation of this. He says on Rosh Hashanah there is an elevation to the entire world. because the world is called before its master, before the king. And he judges the entire world. He is the Melech. And he's a sanctified king, a Melech HaKodesh. So therefore, a sanctity is brought to the whole world. But on Yom Kippur, even a greater sanctity is brought. This brings out the powers of HaKodesh Baruch Hu even more. Why? Because on Rosh Hashanah, he judges the world in accordance to the deen, in accordance to the law. An example, you have a judge. A judge is limited because he can only do what the law demands from him. He can't do what, like he pleases. He can tell the person, this is the law and this is the verdict. If the person comes and says to the judge, I'm not happy with the verdict. I'm not happy with it. What can I do about it? He says, there's nothing further that I can do about it. Because I, as a judge, must execute judgment in accordance to the law. This is the law. But if the person says, I'm still not happy with it, isn't there something I can do? So the judge says, yes, there is something you can do. Go to the king. The king is above the law. The law cannot pardon you, but perhaps the king will. Rosh Hashanah is the Melech HaMishpat. Kodesh Baruch Hu judges the entire world in accordance to the law. Klal Yisrael, they come back to him on Yom Kippur. And there is Meichel V'Saleach. He pardons them. He forgives them. Because he is beyond the law. Because there he is the only Melech. He's partners with no one. And he has no one to answer to. And that's the level that the world reaches on Yom Kippur. That's why the Medrash tells us that tshuva and kapora is something which comes from the higher sources. The Medrash says, when they asked wisdom, if somebody has done a serious sin, what should he do about it? Wisdom decrees that he must be punished. He must become punished. He must be put to death. When they asked the prophets, the prophets answered the same thing. Even when they asked the Torah, if someone has sinned, what can he do about it? So the Torah said that the best we can tell you is bring a sacrifice. Bring a sacrifice. But otherwise you won't be forgiven. Shol HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when they asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chayte Ma Ein Shoy, what should the sinner do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Yaseh Tshuva. Do Tshuva. Return to me and I will forgive you. I will forgive you. That's why it states, Tevi Yosher Hashem Al Kein Yerech HaToyim B'Derech. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who's good and upright, and he teaches the Chatoim how to do tshuva. That this comes only from the level of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not from other levels. This is why it states, tshuva magas at kisei hakovod. The tshuva reaches all the way to the throne of the Almighty. Reaches beyond the level of the seven of Shabbos, beyond the level of eight of the Torah, or of nine, but all the way to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, which is in the furthermost world. There his malchus, his kingship, is revealed on Yom Kippur. This is why the Gemara says in Erechim, it said, Kino Shalayla Mazeh, the harp which they played in this world has seven notes. See, in music also, we find that there are seven notes. The eighth note is the repetition of the first note. So there are seven notes and there are no further notes. You go further, you're just repeating yourself. says Kinor shall Yemesa Mashiach. The Kinor of the days of the Mashiach, though, a new note will be added. A new dimension in music will be able to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A new note. Because in the days of Mashiach, the Torah will be so strong in the world that it will bring with it a level of 8. Bekino shel Eilam Habo, but the harp of the world to come, that will have 10 strings, 10 notes. See? Another dimension. This is what the Torah is telling us. Bachedish Hashvi Be'echol Lachedish, on the seventh month, in the first day of the month, should be Zichrein Trua. That will be Rosh Hashanah. Ach Be'osel Lachedish Hashvi Hazeh, but on the tenth day of the seventh month, where you'll have one sanctity within another sanctity, that will be Yom HaKippurim, a day of Kippurim, where he will come to atone you. We should all be zeicher to have a kaporet. Kodesh Baruch Hu should come and be mechaper klal Yisrael. We should be zeicher to a gemar chasima tova, a sealing in the book of life, and a year for Klal Yisrael of Chaim v'Sholom. Thank you.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za. Via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at PO Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.